Let's celebrate this month. Let's celebrate this week. Welcome to the Big Weekly Blend podcast, the companion to our Big Weekly Blend magazine. Hey, everybody, super excited. Today we get to celebrate the holiday season. We're going to celebrate the end of December. So we're talking about Christmas, Christmas Eve. We're talking about Kwanzaa and all the way through to New Year's Eve. Ooh, so we get to kind of look at this year, 2023, and say goodbye to it. And soon it'll be 2024. Go believe it or not. I just feel way younger. What about you, Nancy? How young do you feel? I feel pretty young.
I feel like I'm 4 years old.
Well, I'm not going to say anything.
No, it's is that like dog years?
No, that's because when Christmas comes, it's good to be a young kid.
Absolutely. From one to 92.
When it's winter, and we're recording this right now from Lubbock, Texas. We've got some awesome guests joining us, but when it airs, we'll be in Eugene, Oregon. And by the time we get there, we may be younger because we might be preserved in ice. they can melt us later and do a human experiment to see how much wine is really in our bodies.
I've got a hair dryer and a chisel, and I'm ready to help you out.
Okay. Joey, good. And Joey's blind, so we're really going to be a good.
I mean, you may miss a limb or two. Maybe a finger gets cut off, but it'll be fine.
Just don't get our middle finger. Don't get our middle finger.
I know that you need that particularly, Lisa.
Nancy does. Because as I drive, Nancy's finger does the steering of the...
Does the talking.
I just direct traffic.
Yeah, he does. And then I have to remind her, we're in the States, we could get shot. Sorry, but you do be careful. But everyone, welcome to the Big Weekly Blend Show. We've got Joey Stuckey, who is a regular co-host here every fourth Sunday. He joins us for shenanigans. Go to his website, joeystuckey.com. Yes, related to the Stuckey goodness of sweetness. And he's sweet, too. And he's an amazing musician. And Joey, you just came back, and we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but came back from England, came back from Milan. So welcome home.
Thank you, my friend. Glad to be back. Always fun to go, but it's always fun to come home, too.
Hey, yeah. We're glad you're home and safe. And I really enjoyed following your adventures on social media, going, you had Stuckey pudding, and you also got to hang out with John Cleese. Not necessarily John Cleese, but you played Fawlty Towers. And Nancy and I are...
Oh, I love Fawlty Towers.
Aren't we just more than jealous, Nancy, that he
It's the classic. It was amazing. Yeah. I mean, we had what's so interesting. If you are in the UK anytime soon, my understanding, this is a long running event, but there's a hotel called the President Hotel, and it's near University College of London. It's kind of in that area, and they have a dinner theater where you get served a 3-course meal. And I'm going to tell you, the food's good, but it's not amazing, but it's good. It's not, but and what they do is there's a cast that plays Fawlty Towers. And so they bring back some of the favorite little moments from Fawlty Towers. Like, when they have the fire drill, that was one thing. Mm. Just sort of a little different sketch. They don't do a full episode, but they do a few little scenes from it, and then they interact with the audience. So they literally harass you, while you're eating, and it's absolutely a joy. I had a wonderful experience where I got harassed quite brilliantly by the guy that was playing Basil Fawlty.
Battle.
And they did Basil the Rat too. They did some scenes from Basil
did
the Rat.
They really?
That episode. Yeah. So they weave it into, an interactive, play. So it's about
cool.
I'd say it's about 50% scripted and about 50% improvised. And there was a guy from Germany there, and they gave him hell. They did the funny walk, and he did the terrible accent, and it was hilarious.
Oh my gosh! Remember the German tourist? Yeah,
they did that. But anyway, so Jennifer, I'm blind, and so my wife Jennifer was saying, "Hey, your spoon's at 12 o'clock," and Basil, the guy that was playing Basil Fawlty, was walking just happened to be walking by, and he stops and comes back. He goes, "Oh, is sir having trouble with his spoon? Maybe you'd prefer a straw." And it was for the soup. It was for the squash soup that we had. And I said, "Yeah, I would love a straw if it wouldn't put you out." And he's like, very, very hostily goes, "Oh no, it's just part of the service. You know, we're just glad to do anything sir wants," you know, very sarcastically. So he brings me a straw back and literally inserts it in my mouth as I'm sitting there. And I'm like, "Hey, I'll play along." So I started drinking my soup with the straw, man. I'm not going to let him win. So we had a blast. It was all kinds of fun.
Well, hey, who knew that we were going to talk about Joey Stuckey sucking soup with a straw? Say that fast 10 times.
Be careful.
Squash soup.
I know, really. But I'm going to bring Glenn Burrows on the show. Glenn is a family history expert, the tour guide and owner of Norfolk Tours in England. Mm. He's on our show every fourth Saturday. He's been on our show for years, and we're all younger, you know, as we were talking, we're all much younger. But I encourage you to go to his website, norfolk-tours.co.uk. All the links for all our guests and everything we talk about will be in the show notes, including our holiday music playlist, our Christmas and winter music playlist that we have going all month long. But welcome back, Glenn. How are you?
I'm fantastic, thank you. And actually, what Joey is just talking about, one of my very, very good friends, he actually does that Basil Fawlty dining experience as well. So there are various companies that do that throughout the country. So
wow.
So you can experience that in other parts of the country as well as in London.
Nice.
And my mate actually pays Basil because he's 6'5". So he does, you know, he does the silly walk and everything. So
that is awesome.
He's very
That's
good.
Cool. That is, very I would cool. go to England. I know we used to Just live in England. That. We love England and visited England. But I'm saying I would go to England just for that experience. When I saw Joey post this, I went running to Nancy. I think we were even in the middle of a podcast. I'm like, dude, no way. Like, he's doing the Basil Fawlty experience.
I think the picture, I may be wrong about this, but I think the picture Jen posted was of Manuel on top of a table. Like while people are eating dinner. Yeah.
Manuel.
So I think that's what she posted. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
I'm so sorry. He's from Barcelona. Yeah.
Barcelona. Oh, Barcelona. I'm not supposed to say that. But
well, there you go. You really have to come over then, because I can actually arrange for my mate Greg to give you a free showing of Basil. Because I mean,
I want to go.
Is that extended to all of us, Glenn? Is that next? Okay,
yeah,
all right.
I'll go.
Yeah,
indeed.
I'm going to bring our next guest on, Dr. Diane Dobry. She is a food, wine, travel writer, a memoirist, a podcaster. She definitely has a strong affinity for the country of Hungary. Her websites are gettinghungary.com, Hungary, and also Hungarian Aquarian, because she does go there with the world of astrology. So welcome back, Diane. You were just in England too.
Yeah, in June, I went to England, Spain, and Hungary. So I loved England. I had never had a chance to see much beyond Heathrow prior to that. So England definitely is going to be on my next tour whenever I get there again.
Wow.
Good.
So are you familiar with Fawlty Towers?
I watched it back in the day. I just, you know, my brain is like, I'm lucky I can remember past before YouTube.
We understand. Okay. We understand. Listen, you know, but I'll tell you, Nancy and I, you know, as we travel the country, there are times, you know, we'll stop at a rest area to rest and we can't really rest because you're still hyped up because you're traveling and driving. And then we watch people in the rest area, which is hobby of ours. And we're threatening to do rest area radio. No, we could write a book at this point about what people do in rest areas.
I think that would be a bestseller. I really do.
Woman give her husband a manicure on a park bench in a rest area.
Is that a code word or is that really what you saw?
Really, we've seen drug deals. We've seen cars blow up. We've seen
just trying to bite off his toenail.
The wife was brutal. She just yanked his toe.
It was gross.
She yanked and he was smoking a cigarette, lying down with one of those things you put around your neck when you fly. You know, and it was the only park bench in this rest area, and they took it while she just started hacking at his big toenail.
It was
she needed to hack at it. She needed a saw. But we have seen a little bit. We've seen people get locked in their cars. We've tried to rescue dogs. We've changed
their clothes.
We've hung out with cats in Alabama. Every rest area in Alabama has cats. It's a whole world. Thing. If you stop and watch what's going on, there's family bathrooms that are really for everybody, and you can see people come in one way, go out the other. Sometimes male come out female, female come out male. Mm-hmm. It's a whole other world, and we absolutely love it. It's a hobby. So, you know, we call it a park because it's a little wild, but, it's also a meeting place for people in a positive way. We've seen people in Arkansas bring a smoker barbecue on the back of their truck, and their family meets under a rest area picnic thing from all over and have a barbecue. So we've seen a little bit of everything. Yeah. And some of the rest areas are cool. Texas has oil derrick style rest areas. Some in Iowa, I think it is, have Dutch windmills. Go in the Southwest, you can have Southwest style kind of
one's adobe. Got a giant roadrunner, the bird.
Oh, that's in Las Cruces, New Mexico. So there's some very unique ones that are going away. So we actually are losing our rest areas, like we are losing neon signs and some of that old school retro travel culture of what was Route 66 kind of vibe. And that's going away. And so it's on the way to making a comeback, but those kind of iconic places are cool. And when people travel, you know, rest areas, you know, it's more than a bathroom.
Are you taking pictures of these unique?
Yes. Ones? Yeah. I think I used to take them for our friend Jim Ostick, who sadly passed away. It was his birthday 2 days ago. Happy birthday, Jim. He had a gazebo blog, believe it or not, of blogging about gazebos around the world and across the country, because it shows care about people being outside in a park, having shade. It shows unity in a community. For musicians, Joey, you know that. Bandstands, historically, are also places where political stuff went down. And a lot of times are outside courthouses. And, but anyway, that's so he started a blog doing that, and we would message him. He knew where we were on this tour more than anyone, except for our friend Steve Schneikert, a Hollywood historian. By the way, his Hollywood history Christmas is ending, closing our show today. But Steve is amazing, and he knows where we're going, because you have to have people know where you're going, because you never know. But Jim really knew, like, timely, like, here. But now I realize we have to really go back and start doing better content, like better, like really be
we have to write
focusing
it.
on these places. There's places in Minnesota and Iowa and the Midwest that are doing a good job of in Indiana. Missouri is doing it too, where in these rest areas they have monarch gardens for monarch butterflies and pollinator gardens, and they're educating people about that, and it's actually part of what's the monarch highway through the center of the country.
That's
so
really
there's all kinds of good stuff.
That's really interesting you mentioned that, because I was just at the funeral for Rosalynn Carter, and
I wanted to bring that up.
She was a real monarch enthusiast, and did a lot in Georgia to help with that, and I was not even aware of that, but they mentioned it at the service. And so that's fascinating. I didn't even heard about the movement, it's fascinating. I'm so excited to hear that people are taking time to make sure that we preserve these amazing creatures. So that's really cool.
Yeah, it's important. There are pollinators connected with bees. The importance of monarch butterflies and bees are important for our agriculture, for our well-being, and just, you know, for the habitats in general. But Joey, going back to that, I wanted to bring that up as a topic of conversation today, because not everyone gets to witness, the celebration of life for Rosalynn Carter, obviously Jimmy Carter's wife. And those two are apparent that so many people are going, okay, it's only, you know, I'd say this in a way of their unity, that he's probably going to float up there with him with her soon, because they were such a connection.
That's sort of the general feeling. You know, he's been in hospice care for a good little while now. And, but yeah, it's an amazing, you know, everybody that eulogized at Rosalind's, you know, service really did mention their 77 year marriage. And,
wow,
you know,
that's amazing.
Former President Carter is 99. And, so, you know, he's doing well. Yeah. I mean, he was there. And it was, it was incredible, because one of the things that really was pleasant to experience, it was very difficult to be, I mean, it was quite an elite, group of people that, you know, were invited to participate. It was very selective. And, my father, the reason that I got to go is because my father was a big part of the Carter administration, during both of the presidential campaigns. And so that's why I was invited to go with Dad. You know, it was the thing that was so exciting for me, because without diving down the political rabbit hole, one thing we can all agree on very briefly is that there's a lot of division in our country, and really throughout the world, there's a lot of division. And so what was really exciting was that every living first lady was present. I thought that was a very powerful moment. That they were all there. Of course, President Carter was there, but he was not very well. He had actually come up the night before and spent the night, so he could be present. And then, President Clinton was there, and President Biden were there. And, so it was a really powerful tribute to her. And she was really a remarkable, my mom, back in the day of being on the road during the campaign, you know, before I was born and then shortly after, they had gone, shopping together and done a lot of things together while they were on the road campaigning. And, so it was really cool to be there for that moment, because I think what I like best, about the legacy of President Carter and our First Lady Rosalind Carter is that I feel like one can analyze the presidency and decide whether it was good, bad, or whatever. But the thing that I like best, I feel personally, that they are the people that have done the most for our country and for the world outside of office. Mm-hmm. And like the stuff the Carter Center has done is just remarkable. Fighting hunger, fighting disease,
Habitat
trying to make sure
humanity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Habitat. And also, President Carter was not, and Rosalind too, they weren't there as figureheads. They picked up hammers and got to work, with Habitat. And then of course, you know, they've been fighting, also to try and make sure that we have, you know, fair elections and democracy across the world. So it was anyway, it was,
you're in Georgia. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a sad occasion, but it was also a really glorious one, because so many people told such remarkable stories. And it was definitely a life well lived. So I'll leave it there, but it was awesome. It was good to be there.
That's cool. I think it's a privilege to be there too. You know,
absolutely,
amazing people, and like you're saying, just they've done so much. And post, you know, yeah, I don't want to get into any political stuff, because it's the holiday season, and there's enough.
Absolutely.
There is a lot of sadness that comes with the holiday season too.
It sure can be. You're missing family that you don't have anymore. I know my wife's my father-in-law passed away December 1st. About 10 years ago, my grandmother passed away, December 10th. So it can be a sad time. But I don't believe in ignoring, things that are sad or that are, you know, tragic or whatever, but I also believe in focusing on, the good stuff. So I'm always happy this time of year.
Music, friends, and loved ones that you do have around, even if it's a phone call away.
And fattening foods. Don't forget that.
And chocolate. Don't forget that. Okay. So, Glenn, Let's go to England on the food thing. The food. What's this?
Well, yes. I mean, we always have such a good selection of sweets and savory food for Christmas. I mean, sausage rolls are a big thing in England at Christmas time. Yeah. I mean, mince pies, them sorts of things, mm-hmm. Christmas puddings, Christmas cake. And that's without the, you know, the turkey and bread sauce and sausages. Again, we do love our sausages in England. And
I have to tell you, for that? I have to tell you, Glenn, I love the British sausage. And, I was so excited because my wife and I, we were there for 2 weeks and we rented a flat. And we cooked breakfast, you know, every morning. I say we, she did it. I'm not allowed in the kitchen anymore, really. The British sausage is so, so amazing. I was
sausage
so, it was,
day.
It was delicious.
Sausage day.
Especially, is it made from lamb? What kind of meat?
No. It's mostly pork sausage.
Yeah.
But you really do need to get it from a local butcher rather than a supermarket or anything because, you know, a local butcher sausage is so much better than a supermarket stuff.
It's porkier.
Well, it is, but it's also much, much better. You know, it's better, 100% better.
And it's also, just the way, I think it's just the way it's seasoned or something. I don't know what the difference is, but the flavor is incredible.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it than just the seasoning. But the thing that is really important to let people know is that if they come to England and they go to, you know, what I call spit and cardboard hotels, you know, the big chain hotels, please do not judge the British sausage by the hotel sausage because it's absolutely nothing like a sausage.
Oh, that's my God. Funny. Nancy, we're doing a sausage show again.
I know. We're back to sausage day.
Yeah, we have to have sausage day. And if you're going to have sausages, you have to go to a local butcher. And you have to go and stay in a proper locally owned hotel, please.
All right. So I got to go to Diane because I know you're in England, and I want to go to English pudding because pudding is a little different in different ways in England. But Diane, in Hungary, like, what are we talking about when it comes to sausage? Because there's definitely Hungarian sausage, right? Oh, boy.
When I first went to Hungary, well, actually, this is the 20-year anniversary. I went there the first time for New Year's Eve, and I said to my friends, should I come back? But, you know, it's not a good opportunity for me this time, but there's a lot more going on there. But the stores, they just have an aisle with just sausage, you know, they live on, you know, the kind of the kolbas, you know, kind of stuff, but sausage. And then they have peppers, a whole aisle of different types of peppers, you know, not just a little bin in the supermarket.
Are these like sweet peppers or hot peppers?
All kinds. You have the Hungarian, the ones that are called Hungarian and they're yellow and they're pale yellow. Those there's mild and hot peppers. If you, they do have a lot of chili.
Wait a minute. Are we having sweet sausage and hot peppers or hot sausage and sweet peppers?
Well, actually, what they tend to have is, like pig shoulder for that's the New Year's thing. And they have lentils to represent coins. That's for New Year's Eve. I know, for Christmas, you know, I always left. I was never there on Christmas, but I know that they have a lot of cakes and pastries and, probably a bone soup. They have stuff where there's all that gelatinous stuff with all the bones and you eat off the meat off the bones, but I'm not sure if that's for Christmas.
But that goes back to Glenn, because as I recall, like some of the pudding is not necessarily sweet in England.
Yeah.
Like you could have two types of pudding, right? And then even when you're talking about cake, it doesn't necessarily mean chocolate cake. Am I right? Or am I going European?
I think probably more European. Although when mincemeat was first introduced, you know, when mince pies, that used to be savory. But what happened was that they actually had minced meat and then they had to put so much fruit and preserves and different spices in it, that actually what took over was the fruit and the spices. So now mincemeat is all fruit and spices. So there's no actual meat in mincemeat.
Really?
In a mince pie.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was highly confused. Because when we went to see A Christmas Carol at the Old Vic, and while we were in town, and they were giving out free mince pies. And I think they said mince meat pies. I'm like, wait, is this that can't be sanitary? They were fruit, and they were delicious.
Yeah, that's that mince meat in England is sweet.
Gotcha.
But minced meat is meat.
Yeah, so it's got a D. There's a mince and mince. Nancy, we remember that, right? Even when you come here, it's ground beef. And I was like, what are you doing? You're mushing the minced beef into ground. Like, when we got here, I thought that ground beef was going to be like a pate, and it wasn't. Because even in South Africa, it was minced meat, right, Nancy? Like,
ground meat is just meat that's put in a grinder.
Yeah,
so my dad was in England, my dad.
We put it through a mincer.
Yeah, so my dad was a butcher, and that's what he did. It was just this big grinder thing. Stuff in there.
Everything and get on with it, apparently.
You know, but you can use a grinder for lots of stuff, you know?
Yeah, sausage.
Sausage. It all comes back to sausage.
It does. Everything is sausage day. It's always sausage day in Big Blend World, But this is fascinating about going from like English food, Hungarian food, because at some point they have to have some kind of connection being so close together and people moving around.
I have a question for everybody. Like, what is your traditional Christmas food that you have to have every year? I mean, start with Diane on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the cook for Christmas. For a while I was making, prime rib, but it got to the point where it was like $400 for the roast. So I get like the filet mignon, the Chateaubriand roast, and I get extra filet mignon steaks. And I always make like the spinach and onions, which was my German mother-in-law's specialty. And everybody likes that. And I like to have mashed potatoes, and I make some kind of rolls. I'm basically kind of all about the meat, and I make like a wine sauce gravy kind of thing.
Nice.
Ooh, for your wine sauce gravy, we just had a pre-Thanksgiving with our friend Rondi in Tucson, just south of Tucson. And she used to live in South Africa too. It was cool. But anyway, we had our friend, Peggy Fiendaka, Joey, and Glenn. You've been on the show with Peggy from LDV Winery. And so she gave us some wines, and then we were naughty. We were like, oh, this is so good. Let's have another. But anyway, she did a slow braised, short ribs, in a slow cooker with wine, which we were going to do this whole other thing. Then she's like, well, it's you two coming, we're just going to soak it. And anyway, so she made this slow cooked short ribs, and I have no clue. Nancy, I don't think you and I have ever cooked ribs, have we? I don't think. Maybe you have in some history before,
but
me,
not
but
like that.
No. And so she did this slow cook. When we have these dry mushrooms, and you all know I'm into mushrooms like big time. Anything to do with mushrooms and fungus, I'm about it. No, I'm not hallucinating or doing any of that stuff. But we're talking about like edible. Now that I can't say now.
Can you hear the skepticism?
Listen, I'm talking about food mushrooms, not food to whack out in your brain.
You do know that every time you eat a mushroom, another Smurf goes homeless, right?
I do know that, and it's really sad. But then they have to remember they're living under a fruit. So
it's not a fruit.
It's going to go. It's going to go.
Why is it a fruit?
Because it is. It's a fruit. So, like, it is the fruit of the network of the roots. Mushrooms are the fruit of the root.
So they are technically fruits, you're saying? Like a tomato's a fruit?
Yeah, in a way. But it's like
a fungal fruit. You don't have pits or seeds or anything. So.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, they have. Yes, they do.
They have spores. The spores
are the seeds. So, like, when we're in Appalachia, that's where I got crazy about mushrooms. I would hike with this dog, Lucy, sweet Lucy. She didn't care about mushrooms. I did. And so my photos are terrible, but I saw so many mushrooms and it just, I was like enthralled. Amazing. And we watched this Netflix thing about fantastic fungi. I think it's
called. Oh yeah. I saw that.
And oh my God. And you realize that trees mm-hmm. and mushrooms have been hibernating, living together for centuries and they're mm-hmm. old. Mushrooms are older than dinosaurs and they have these networks.
They're going to save the world.
They are. They are going to save the world medicinally and edibly for our food. And they're looking at lion's mane really being good, like getting rid of coffee, plastic. Which they do. We'll do a whole show on this. We're going to have to do a mushroom show. Yeah. But anyway, I'm going to go back to Melissa's Produce does these dried mushrooms, porcinis, shiitakes, morels, oysters. Yeah. So anyway, you're supposed to rehydrate these mushrooms for half an hour and whatever. But because this was a slow cooker with wine, she just threw them in there. Nancy, did that not bring earthy goodness to that short rib?
It was so good.
It really was. It just made the sauce. And so mm-hmm. when you're doing your ribs, like when you're talking about that, I'm just in that sauce. I'm just going to say those mushrooms may go really well.
Well, now, Diane. It's funny because we have a bit of a mushroom tradition for Christmas morning.
Stuckies were full of shrooms.
Yeah, we are, my friend. We're full of something. And my wife makes this amazing egg bake. She does with Tennessee Pride sausage and shredded
sausage.
Cheese and back to sausage. It's all back to sausage.
Yeah,
and she uses a lot of mushrooms in it. It's really delicious. Ooh. I mean, it's really great. But I was going to go to Glenn and say, Glenn, what is your traditional Christmas fare? The thing that you have to have to make it feel like Christmas where you are.
Well, in our family, it has to be bread sauce to go with the turkey. And it is my mother-in-law's bread sauce. And if you don't know what bread sauce is, you have an onion and you boil it in a load of milk until it's soft. And then you chop it up into lots and lots of little bits. And then you add lots and lots of fresh breadcrumbs, proper breadcrumbs, until they soak up all the milk. And then you add about half a pound of butter and some salt.
Oh, wow. Sounds amazing.
And it is to die for. And if we don't have bread sauce, it isn't Christmas.
And you put gravy on top of that from the turkey?
Well, you have the bread sauce on the side as well as the gravy. But the bread sauce, bread sauce and gravy. Yes. Bread sauce is what makes Christmas dinner special.
I don't remember turkey. Incredible. In England or South Africa ever being part of, I don't remember eating turkey ever till we got to this country, ever.
Oh, yeah. Turkey was not all that easy or fun to get in South Africa.
In England, I don't remember it either. I remember hot pots.
We either had, when I was younger, we either had the turkey or we had a really big cockerel. So what do you call them? Roosters? No, we didn't have geese. I've never eaten goose. They're far too expensive and far too fatty.
Yeah.
In Hungary, they have goose.
Yeah, but that's all fat. So
we just had about 100, over 100 of them fly over us yesterday.
I know. I don't think
we didn't get pooped on. I thought we were going to get pooped on.
Here's my question. Are you excited or saddened by that? I can't tell.
To get pooped on by a goose.
I don't want to be pooped on. I asked them not to, and they didn't. And our friend on the phone is a birder. He's a bird watcher. Listen, can you hear him? Can you hear him? And she's part deaf, but she could actually hear him come over on my phone, like hear them going. I mean, they were just one batch after the. I mean, I'm not exaggerating, Nancy. It is definitely
they're migrating somewhere.
They're not Canadian geese, Canada geese, right? And they're going over, but not one. I said, don't you poop on me because, I'm looking up and, I'm talking. My mouth is open. I'm like, the odds for me are there? But it didn't happen. So I'm happy, Joey. I get pooped on a lot. So,
I think there was one.
I have to say, I forgot something about the Christmas meal that because my daughter-in-law is Italian, so her mother makes a Christmas seafood and pasta meal, but I can't eat seafood. But I make a big lasagna also for Christmas Day because of the Italian side. And
nice.
It's my son lives in an area where they have like real Italian pork stores and pasta. They make homemade pasta, so I take the homemade lasagna. There are these big sheets of lasagna, not the store bought noodles, but the big sheets.
Yeah, it was, you know, I one of the reasons I forswore the diet while I was in you know, Europe back in November is we were in Milan and then in Venice in Italy. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get some real coffee.
Oh boy, here we go.
And I'm going to get some some great sweet pastries. And then I'm going to get some great pasta. And we did. And we lucked out because at the conference that I was speaking at, one of my good friends is actually from Milan. So, he was there and, he actually took us to dinner. So, okay, tell us where to go to get the real non-touristy nonsense, where to get the real deal. And he was able to, not only did he take us to a great restaurant, but he actually ordered. I said, you order for us. You just get what you think is good and we'll just share it around the table. We did. And so, and then of course I said, also, now we're not going to have you for the full week, so you got to tell us where to go the rest of the time we're here. And he did, but it was so much fun to have some real lasagna and some really great pizzas, which are kind of different than the U.S. They're definitely different than U.S. Mm-hmm. pizza. And the other thing that was great was there was literally about a block from our hotel. There was this wonderful bakery that opened every morning at 6 a.m. And so every morning we'd walk down there and get a real croissant and some good coffee and something else. And, you know, everything was, I didn't realize this, but according to my friend that's from Milan, he said that the Italians do mainly sweet breakfast pastries, not savory. So it was hard to find anything. You know, we couldn't really find anything savory, which is more what you're used to here in the States, but it was awesome. And then we walked so much. I felt like we didn't sin too badly. By getting these croissants and coffee. And we did actually have a weird experience. And I don't know if anybody else has had this, but, it was really cold and, I asked for some hot chocolate and they had some and they give you like a really small cup of it, about the size of a small fist. And, I thought, well, that's not much, but you know, we'll drink it. It was so thick, man. It was so hard to drink. And it was so sweet. It was like a liquefied brownie. And I'm glad that it was delicious, but like, it was so sweet. I was like, I'm glad I didn't have any more because I could not have finished it. And I'm a professional eater.
It is, Nancy, remember when we were in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we went to Krakow, I can't remember the name of the chocolate place, and they made these chocolate elixirs that what the Mayans and the Aztecs drank, and it's just not necessarily hot chocolate, and it was in a little cup like that.
It was good.
I basically thought I could do Rambo run up the steps of Pittsburgh.
Wow.
After drinking this.
That's disturbing.
It was in the middle of summer and I just stood up and I'm like, dude, let's go. It was crazy because it's like a whole, there's a thing about European drinking chocolate versus American. American waters down their chocolate. American chocolate is disgusting. And compare. I'm sorry, American.
Man, the chocolate in Europe is so good.
I don't want to knock out the small mom and pop chocolateers.
But by and large, the bulk chocolate we get in bulk is not good. You don't know it's not good until you taste the European stuff, and you're like, oh my god.
We take out chocolate and we put in more sugar over here.
Yeah, yeah.
And not good sugar.
Yeah.
It's watered down.
Yeah.
No, it's
Lisa and Nancy, you guys travel so much. Is it hard for you to have a traditional Christmas dinner?
We have a pickle. Yes. We went, I think we got the most festive.
That's weird.
In Natchitoches, Louisiana, recently we were at their lighting of their 97th Christmas Festival of Lights that goes until Epiphany, January 6th. I think that's Epiphany. And we've talked about it for years with Arlene from the Natchitoches Convention and Visitor Bureau, and we went to that. And, you know, we have, you know, with COVID and all of that, no one kind of hung out, you know. And right. Nancy, we haven't been to a holiday event in a gazillion
a
years.
Long time. Yeah.
That was festive. And they had fireworks over the water. And
it was beautiful.
Then
where was this again?
Natchitoches, Louisiana. Natchitoches, okay. Louisiana. Okay. It's the oldest settlement. It's in Northwest Louisiana. Oldest settlement in the Louisiana Purchase. And we went the second weekend and they did drone lights. And Joey, you wouldn't enjoy this, but it's still a festive atmosphere. And they had live music. You would enjoy that.
Yeah.
But these drones were doing things of lights and spelling out the name Natchitoches and Merry Christmas in the sky.
That is amazing.
Instead of fireworks,
so cool.
Which we are not huge on fireworks because of animals. Really, yeah. It hurts them. They don't know what's going on. And veterans from war duck. And
right.
At one point, I almost ducked. Just because it's so loud. And we know animals bail from their homes, get lost, and
yeah,
all of that kind of stuff. So we're not a huge, you know, but at least it's in one centralized place. And the people living around that centralized downtown location know this happens. And if you have animals, sedate them, maybe, or, you know, that kind of thing. Versus everybody blowing up things in their backyard on the 4th of July, which
people
doing it, but animals do. I mean, anyway, they do. So we're not a huge thing, but we now on the road, Nancy, what we have our champagne and our pizza and Nancy makes omelets and we have croissants.
Nice.
We always have to have a croissant.
Okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
There's a thing about omelets. Croissants. Yeah. And bacon or sausage. And,
let's just say sausage since we've been sausaging.
But
we have
a Christmas ornament that we got from Gladewater, Texas, and it's a German tradition that if you find the pickle ornament, you get the extra present.
That's right. Yeah.
So we sell. We just, you know, sit down with our breakfast and we all have the pickle and look at each other and go, "We got the pickle," and so we both say, "We got a second chance at life." So
you know, we got the pickle. Sounds like maybe it could be a great funk tune that maybe I should write.
We got the pickle and the sausage.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
And, you know, it's funny because I was running around Milan saying I got the cocoa because when you said I got the pickle, made me think of that because this Milan barista said, "I put cocoa in your coffee. You're going to love it." Okay. And so the rest of the day, everybody's asking, "Hey, do you have the cocoa?" I said, "Yes, I have the cocoa." So there you go. Our tradition, we try not to be on the road during Christmas. The thing that really makes it Christmas here is twofold. The cranberry relish is really important to us. And it's one of the few things that I help make. So, because there's not much danger in it.
Do you squeeze the cranberries?
I do. I really do. That is very true. I smash them by hand. And that is not any kind of euphemism or exaggeration. And the other thing is my wife's dressing is absolutely amazing. And it comes down to two main ingredients, sage and onions and all the things that you expect to find in dressing. But her two things that she does, I think, better than anybody that I've ever met, her cornbread is just extra special. It's not sweet cornbread. It's savory cornbread. But I don't know what she does to make it so good, but it's the best I've ever had. And here in the South, we're all about cornbread. And then the other thing is she actually puts diced up oysters in her dressing. And it sounds ridiculous, but the thing is, it doesn't make it taste fishy or anything like that. And you really can't, there's no oyster flavor that you can perceive. But it just does something special with the dressing. I don't know why, but it's anyway. So those are the two big things for us.
I wanted to ask Glenn, when you have the turkey, do you have cranberry there, or do you have some other? Do you have any fruit with your meal with turkey?
Yeah, my wife actually made some cranberry sauce or cranberry jelly earlier in the year to have for Christmas. I think she probably put a little bit of brandy or something in with it as well.
There you go.
Really?
There it is.
So it's not
it's not a party unless you're seeing double, right?
I mean, yeah, but Glenn, you've got to have cheese scones too, right? Still on Christmas?
Well, I fill up with sausage rolls at Christmas time.
Yeah, boy.
Ah. Well, I want to say, you know, we're talking about the holidays and Joey, Nancy used to make roast corned beef because she loves Reuben sandwiches so much.
Oh, me too.
This is her way of making sure she gets a Reuben after any holiday. And so she would roast a corned beef with cloves. You used to do cloves and all kinds of things. And mustard, right, Nancy?
And brandy.
Oh, yeah, she'd cover that later. Yeah. Nancy made a happy corned beef.
My grandmother that came from Hull in England, and she cooked with brandy no matter what she made.
Glenn, is that normal? Or is it just our family? It's soaked.
Brandy's always been quite a popular spirit in England, because if you think about it, where we are on the, especially Hull, is north on the east side. And if you think about it, that is quite close by sea to northern France and Holland. So we used to get a lot of smugglers bringing in the brandy and the gin.
You know, our family's involved.
Well, exactly. The Norfolk coast especially was a haven for smugglers, especially in the 1800s.
And Glenn, I spy another podcast.
Oh, well, there you go.
I know, Smuggler's we do. Nice. We need to do that. Well, Glenn, how close are you to Hull?
To Hull? I suppose we are about 4 or 5 hours away.
Oh, that's nothing. Wow. Oh, you never know.
Nowhere as far in England, is it?
No, that's why I said how close are you? Yeah, but that's amazing. It's amazing, like, when you think of ancestry. I was just reading a thing about people with blue eyes, jive blue eyes, going to gray, that we have one common ancestor, so we're all inbred. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what that means, because they said that it goes down to the Danes at some point, that, you know. So
it's on the east coast. You're on the east coast in Hull, and we're on the east coast. So we had a lot of Vikings and, you know, Danish. Vikings. You know, we had all those people coming across. And also in East Anglia, we had a lot of people over from Holland and northern Germany as well, because it's only just across the water, and it's easier to cross water than it is to cross land. So if you're going anywhere, you'd use the water if you could, you know. So to go from Norfolk to Holland was a very simple journey.
But Nancy,
to go from Norfolk to London was not an easy journey, because
no wonder I can speak Afrikaans.
Exactly.
You know, see? That's weird. Well, go ahead. Sorry, Nancy, go ahead.
Glenn, I was just going to ask Glenn, my grandmother had this Christmas tradition. I don't know if it's just her or if it's British, but she used to hide a toy. This is going to sound bad, but a baby, like a plastic toy baby in the Christmas pudding cake thing. And
Isn't that what they do in New Orleans and King?
Yeah, the King cake.
Now, what we used to do is we would, when we were making the Christmas puddings, we would put in a silver sixpence or a silver threepence.
The
people, and whenever you're eating it, obviously, if you got the silver sixpence, you got the silver sixpence. That was a lot of money, you know. So we would put in a silver sixpence. You couldn't put a plastic doll in a Christmas pudding because it would melt. You could put a china one in.
Well, so that's probably what she would
have done. She wouldn't have had a plastic doll. She would have had a china doll.
China doll.
And you could have a little tiny china doll that you could put in the Christmas pudding.
Because it was just a little naked baby.
Yeah. Why not?
Naked. It's naked. Good. If you're good in Joey's neck of the woods, it's naked, right, Joey?
Yeah. And
naked in Hungarian means for you. Naked.
Oh, yeah. It was for the new year. Like, the fresh beginning and all that. That's what she used to say.
That must have been. It's probably something from Hull, and that's definitely not done in Norfolk. We used to put sixpences in ours.
But
how many
teeth
did you break doing that?
I know, right? But the China doll is like. And now I immediately went to David Bowie, and then I had to remember that was not the lyric. It's weird. It's weird. Like, now I think about that, but I want to go, Diane. Do you have roots in Hungary? I know I've asked you this before, but like, what are your family roots? I want to ask Joey too, like, in regards to your cultural makeup. Who are you, Diane?
who am I? In fact, I'm surrounded right now. I have my grandmother's portrait and the family portrait, the Christophs, and they came from the north east of Hungary when it was, you know, the old Hungary. They call it Trianon, when after World War One they took so much land from Hungary. But my great grandmother was born in what's now Slovakia, Kosice, Slovakia, and my grandmother's sister was born in Ungvar, or they lived in Ungvar, which is now Ukraine, a Hungarian area in Ukraine. But I had at one point been importing Hungarian wine, and I named it after my label was Christoph Wines, after my great grandfather and great grandmother, because my great grandfather worked. Apparently, his parents were noble, and his mother died, and his father remarried a woman that he didn't like, so he went to live with another group. And I'm still trying to be sure who it was, because my grandmother says it was the Hussars. It was either the Hussars or the Esterhazys, and he took care of the horses, and he also helped with the wine. And she said one time he had some jelly wine that came out of the barrel, and she says he was asleep for 3 days. I mean, my grandmother wasn't even born, but I guess this was the family story. He was asleep for 3 days after tasting that jellied wine. So that must be my heritage is Hungary wine, and, you know, whatever.
Are you related to Chris Christopherson? I had to ask that for Nancy.
Chris Christopherson? No, I don't think so. I don't know. So,
my grandmother on my dad's side came from Hungary. Uh-huh. And she never spoke any English, so we didn't talk a lot because nobody understood her. But she just, man, she was... get in the kitchen and it would come one pie after another.
Oh, they love to cook and clean.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Is the housewife. Mm-hmm.
No, she made Nancy and her brother clean the courtyard with a toothbrush.
Yeah.
So funny.
I didn't get that gene.
No, man.
I got the cooking gene, though.
Nancy got the gene of passing it down to her daughter.
Yeah, she used her toothbrush.
She got that gene. Giving you the toothbrush to clean the yard.
No, just like, hey, I've done my part. You go clean now. You're the cleaner of things. I've done mine. You've cleaned the courtyard with, you know, like a brick courtyard with a toothbrush. I think you're allowed to pass it down. That's okay. You know,
when I stay in Hungary, my first day was I was with my friend Yuri, and he said he left me there to figure things out. And I called myself. I had a blog, and it was the Domestic Diva of Dunakeszi, which is north of Budapest. And then the other friend, Janos, I stayed at his house and was taking care of his dog, but his dog was having accidents all over the house. And I went out for the day, and he came back, and he's like, you have to clean my house the same way you clean your house. And I'm thinking, you don't want that, because I don't even know that. So I just said, if you want me to clean every day, I will do that, but that's not the way I clean my house, so I'm sorry if the dog made a mess.
Oh boy, here we go. This is hey. So Joey, what is your family history in regards to where do you come from? But the name Stucky, I'm thinking almost German.
Yeah, that is a lot of it. Yeah, German and apparently Scot-Irish. So that's what I've been told over the years. I do not have empirical data to back that up, and I really should do that 23andMe or something and find out the details. But that's what has always been told to me by, actually, interestingly, both sides of from my mom's side and my dad's side. So they have very similar heritage, although my mom is from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and her family was all from that area. And my dad is from a little town here in Georgia called Ryan, Georgia, or Rhine. Georgia, they say Ryan here, but actually it's Rhine, like the river. Which, you know, has a German name, so who knows? But yeah, that's my understanding. Interestingly, my wife did the 23andMe thing a couple years ago because she's adopted, and she did not have her family. She had no family medical history, And so she was looking into her origins, partly for, any kind of like, genes and things that might indicate different health risks or whatever. And then partly for, curiosity about where she's from. And she always felt like, and I think she felt this way because she's adopted, she always just assumed she'd be a real smattering of this, that, and the other. And it turns out that her entire DNA strand is English, is from that area. And I thought, well, you lucky so and so, because I would love to have that.
Glenn, but Glenn, isn't that part of? It's hard for those who are adopted to really trace their roots back. Have you ever helped someone in their family history try to go back if they've been adopted and done something like Jennifer, Joey's wife?
Yeah, I mean, if you have your DNA done and you register it on enough sites, you will find connections. And then using them connections, you can actually find who you originate from, not necessarily, exactly, but you can find out areas, you can find families. But obviously, if you end up connected to, a family, it's always very difficult to know which actual member of that family is your direct ancestor. Because the same thing has actually happened to me quite recently. Although all of my ancestors that I've found up to date lived within 50 miles of where I live today, it weren't until I had my DNA done that I found out that my granddad's dad was not my great grandmother's husband. So my granddad's dad was not actually who he always thought it was, because I've got absolutely no connections on that side of the family. So what I have discovered is that my great grandfather was one of two brothers who lived in the same area as my great grandmother. So I can narrow it down to two brothers, but I can't narrow it down to which one in particular, because there is no way to do that. But the interesting
that's wild.
Thing,
that
yes, is it crazy. Is wild, especially when you consider that I've got 40 years of research that actually is nothing to do with me, because I've been researching since 1977, and I only discovered a couple of years ago that my great granddad isn't my great granddad.
Yeah, and they didn't expect you to find out, did they?
No.
My granddad didn't know. My dad didn't know. Because I said to my dad, didn't your dad know? And he said, no, I've never ever heard that before. Because his parents in inverted commas, had been married for 5 years when he came along. So there was no thought that his dad wasn't his dad. But obviously, my great grandparents lived in a very rough area of King's Lynn, and they were very, very poor. So the person who I know is one of the two brothers, he was a fisherman. So probably my great grandmother couldn't pay the bills one week.
Oh, hey, Joey, it sounds like you need to write a new song.
It's crazy, when you start looking back, like I found my family in the Museum of the Occult in San Francisco, a whole display on the Holroyd family from England. Mm. And I'm like, no way. And
now, what was the exhibit?
It was about witches.
Witches.
Yeah. Yeah.
I knew you were a witchy woman. Yeah.
Yeah, no, from the Isle of Man, and Glenn is going to get mad at us, as we've talked about this before, and he's like, you need, okay, Glenn, New Year promise. We're going to do our DNA thing. There's no excuse.
Ouch.
No, Nancy, we don't have to do any injections.
No.
Well, you swab your mouth.
It's all it is. Oh, okay.
You spit the tube.
Yeah.
It's either that or you just scratch the inside of your cheek. Simple
as
that.
Get your stuff out your cheek. Yeah. But we have Isle of Man witches burned at the stake for talking to animals. Yeah. Go figure.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Mm.
And we were written about in the National Geographic years ago, and I'm still trying to find the article. Yeah. But my grandmother, I mean, even when I knew her when she was alive, had the article, and dang it. If I knew Glenn years ago, I would have snatched that thing and made copies, but I didn't, you know, I was young and dumb. And so I,
which,
I
which family was this?
The Holroyds.
Holroyd. Holroyd. Okay.
And yeah. Now apparently our castle is an apartment complex.
But I know. Not really. As a kid, but I always thought I'm going to go claim my castle one day.
Glenn,
and I'm going to have my castle, but now it's an apartment building.
But Glenn, I really want to bring this up. About right now, it's the holiday season. People are gathering for Christmas, for New Year's during that week. And during that week, sometimes we have that time with family and you look at each other and go like, I don't know if I can do this or what the hell am I going to talk about? I don't know you. And I'm being real because you know that's real. This would be the time. Don't be stupid like me and not make a copy of that article from National Geographic.
Yes. This is so important that we are normally we're together as families, extended families, and now is the time to talk to your older relations because, you know, they go. You know, I'm really fortunate. I knew three of my grandparents. I only lost my dad last year. And he was 88 and he wrote down so many of his memories and he was able to tell me so much. So now is the time to talk to your relations. And also, I mean, if you're thinking about doing DNA, now is the time to get half a dozen of these little test kits and ask your eldest blood relatives to take a DNA test because luckily, I asked both my parents to do their DNA and I'm finding relations through their DNA that didn't show up in my DNA because obviously I've only got half of my dad's DNA and half of my mum's DNA. So therefore they've got a whole lot of DNA that I haven't got. So I'm getting relations showing up for my mum and dad that didn't show up for me because they're another generation further back. So if you've got a granddad still alive, get him to do his DNA for you and talk to him and talk to
him. Why does it always have to be male, Glenn? Like it's always
no. Talk to your granny. DNA can be done with women as well. And it does work nearly as well. Certain things don't show up as well with women, but you know, at the end of the day, get DNA because you will be amazed what it's all about. And also talk to people and make notes or even just tape your conversation on the phone.
I was going to say, you've got a recorder in your pocket these days. You can easily record and then transcribe it later.
And Diane, I have got to bring Diane into this because that is what she does as a memoirist, right, Diane? Tell everybody.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I'm like the family historian. No, everybody's got it all wrong. So when I went to England in June, I was talking, it was my cousin's children who live in England. So I was visiting them and they were giving all the wrong names and all the wrong facts. And I said, look, you know, I have all the stories, you know, I recorded my grandmother's oral history. That was my master's project. And I did a little book about her that, and my master's project was a video with her speaking. And I had like all kinds of places. She lived in Ithaca and met my grandfather. He went to Cornell. So I had created a video of that. And now I have this chapbook that the Historical Society is helping to provide photos for, and I'm going to put that together. But when I went to England, I had these, you know, I don't know if you ever see it, it's a mix book, they call it, and you can just put in photos, and I just kept taking photos of the photos that I have on hand that everybody just kind of like, here, you take it. And I have diaries and everything from my great aunt. I'm writing her story now, but I created a family in, well, I have it, but you guys were not on screen, but it was a family like the Christophs and the Troutwines. And then I showed, here's the Troutwine family. Here's the Christoph family. And there's one question I had, and I haven't figured that one out, But I showed like all this history, and I put the story of my grandmother that she told, and then I put a story of the Troutwine family, my grandfather's side, and how they had a business and everything. And my cousins and their kids were like really excited about it. And I sent it to my brothers, and they haven't even read it. They're like, funny. I don't have time for that.
Well, later, but everybody comes to their funny. Time. So is part of your family in England, like from England? Because I know Glenn is like, come on.
No, on my father's side, it's his name was Hornbuckle, but my cousin's daughter married a guy from Cyprus, and he had to leave the U.S., so he went to London, so she followed him. And then his son did an internship in London and loved it so much that he moved there, and he lives in York with he got married in the Minster, the York Minster, which is beautiful. He gave me a tour this summer.
Wow, this family history is amazing. Crazy. Joey, what about your family? I mean, you have an incredible, I mean, you've got the Stuckeyverse, right? You've got like really the Stuckey line is interesting in politics, in confections, roadside confections, and Stuckey versus Bucky's, right? which came first? I'm going to have a feeling the Stuckeys came first, right?
Well, I mean, I don't have the answer to that, but I believe I'm not 100% certain, but I believe Stuckey's really did come first because interestingly, my parents, who got married in 1959, and my mom was like 17. I think my dad was 21 and, they have a real interesting history. So, on my mom's side, you have some Cherokee Indian, history. Mm-hmm. With her, grandparents. And then, I never knew them. But her father was a Baptist minister. And so he ended up in this little small town, as a preacher. And my dad's side of the family, the Stuckeys, had a lot of land in sort of middle, well, I guess it'd be South Georgia, but the Eastman area, McRae, Eastman, Ryan, that whole area.
Beautiful.
They had a lot of land down there, so they owned a farm. They had a pulpwood business. They had they owned a grocery store. They owned a butcher's shop. They had all this stuff, and they had they had farms and all this stuff. So my dad did a lot of those different jobs, and you know, he was a 12-year-old kid driving trucks, which was not legal, but. That's what it is. So, but on
the South, you can get away with everything.
I mean, if you were in a farm family like that, as soon as you're able to work, you're working. I mean, that's just, he had eight brothers and sisters. And so a large family. And so, they owned a general store and all this stuff. And then, my cousin, my cousin Stephanie is the person responsible for reinvigorating and bringing back the Stuckey stores and the Stuckey candy. And they've actually, not only have they started the brand anew and got it what they call Stuckey Expresses, which means there's small little aisles in a lot of gas stations and small mom and pop grocery stores. But they've brought back and are really helping to preserve and even bring new Stuckey stores online. Back in the late 80s or early 90s, Stuckey's was sold to Pet Milk and then changed hands a couple times, I think, after that. And the reason for it was that my cousin's father, who was one of my dad's dearest relatives, was a congressman in Washington, D.C. and was up there for, I don't know, 20, 30 years doing that. And he just didn't really have the time to devote to the Stuckey candy, empire, if you will, because he was so busy in politics. It just wasn't, they kept it for a long time. But So like I said, they sold it off. And my dad owned a couple stores when I was younger. and he also owned a couple of Bojangles, which is odd. But anyway, pretty good chicken and red beans. But anyway, So, what's interesting is the whole Stuckey's candy store, if the family folklore is to be believed, was during the war, World War II, things were rationed, and because they had a candy, they were making candy, they were able to get extra sugar. And the lore is that they use that sugar for moonshine. And
our family knows you.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know how true these things are, but I do know that my dad had several relatives that bootlegged, liquor during the war, during the Prohibition, all that kind of stuff. So the sort of comical story that's told in the family is that my dad was the bootlegger's son. And my mom was the preacher's daughter, and they eloped and got married. So there's a whole, a whole story there. And yeah, so I mean, but I'm so proud of I won't say my cousin has done, I mean, she was a state representative, for DeKalb County. She's a lawyer, and she gave all those things up and wanted to bring back the family business. And she's done that. And what I'm really the most proud of, is that, she has gone back to the original Stuckey recipe. She has gone back to making the candy herself, at a factory. At one time they were farming it out to another candy company to make it, and it was a different recipe. So the old recipes are back. The quality is top notch. And she's also introduced some Stuckey's pecan beer at select, restaurants in Georgia.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. I don't know. Pecan beer sounds like a terrible idea to me, but hey, what do I know? But she's done that, and the packaging is better. And they've even brought back the old chintzy Stuckey souvenirs, like the rubber alligator and some of that stuff. So they've even brought
that back. Everybody needs those kind of touristy little souvenirs. Come on, that's part of it. Glenn, come on. How many people have, like, the London Tower or like the phone box, the phone booth from, England, come on.
Everybody's got a phone box and a letterbox, haven't they? You have to.
Exactly. I love how full circle this conversation has gone into family. Food has been, centric from, sausage. It's always sausage day on Big Boy Radio to candy and chocolates to wine. I mean, moonshine, who knows? But I think, Glenn, the family history is really, it's interesting because there's always a connection with all of, when we listen to everyone's story today.
Yeah.
There's a connection in some way to us,
I think that has all shown through with everybody who's been talking is the importance of family. And I think, I know it's all a bit of an old cliche that, Christmas, you all get together as a family, and not everybody is lucky enough to have family close by. And not everybody's lucky enough to have a family, but it's definitely the case.
Yeah.
But even if you don't have any family left, Christmas is definitely the time when we always think about family, And whenever we do get the chance to get together, how important it is to be with family, to be with people who share your blood. And, it is so important that, actually, what is more important than the love of a family, and we've all talked about it.
And forgiveness needs to come in family too, because we have to realize that family comes in different generations.
Oh, it does.
And the generation we're in now may not be how things were done in the past. So, and it doesn't mean people were evil. It just sometimes understand that times are not there and then, like, I'm trying this to just say I'm not very good at political correctness because is not politically correct.
No,
but I things mean, I, happened I was... in the past that you sometimes we have to move forward
yes
and not stomp
And I think one of the most important things is when we do get together with our members of the family, especially with, you know, the older generation together with the really younger generation, they all need to realize that that's a different world. You know, even for me, you know, my grandchildren are still very young, but they're growing up in a completely different world to what I grew up in.
God.
And it's not that long ago. You know, I think I was telling you the other week, Lisa, that I went to pick up my granddaughter from her primary school, and she goes to a city centre primary school not far from here, and she has every ethnic group that you can ever imagine in her class. I had one ethnic group in my class. In fact, 99% of the people were all from people who were born in the village. You know, so that is such a different thing. In that 60 years, the difference between what I grew up with, which was a very insular, very concentrated gene pool, so to speak, into now what my granddaughter is growing up in is a world full of people who actually come from all over the world, literally.
That's
amazing.
It's amazing.
My high school in South Africa, we were the last segregated high school or school experience in South Africa. And I say experience, not in that, that's a yay. That was what it was. And what people don't understand in South Africa, segregation was also segregation between the British and the Dutch. And I don't know if I should even use the word segregation, but it was, we were split. Now, if you're in a private school, anybody with money could go in there, no matter what language they spoke, what color of their skin. Mm-hmm. But if you're in public school, which Nancy always insisted, you're getting in there, you know, not that we had the money anyway to go anywhere else, but you need to be in with the real people kind of thing. And we had, here's your British white, and then there's the Dutch white, and then you had the African, you had the Cape Colors, you had, you know, the mix, and sorry, that's what they
Indians.
Were. Yeah, they called Indians. You had all these. But in the year after our high school, they opened it up, and no kidding, there were issues. There were tribal wars. There was unrest in the first year or so, yet everybody wanted it. Like for us kids, we didn't give a damn about who, what, and where. We didn't care. And you know, unless you carried some chip on your shoulder from childhood, from parents giving you stuff you shouldn't.
Teaching you to have faith.
I didn't experience that. And I watch now my high school friends with their kids' celebrations, their matriculation, their all these life, you know, life parties and just gatherings. They're multicolored, multilingual, and happy with smiles. And I'm like, it makes me, South Africa is not the easiest country. It's complicated, and don't ever go into African politics on the entire continent unless you know what you're talking about and have lived there. Don't even bother talking to me about it until you've lived there. But to see the happiness of kids that were my age, that I knew their parents at my age and grew up with them, I can't even tell you the joy and watching kids that are figuring out their gender and being able to do it. That didn't happen when I existed. They were beaten up. And all colors, right? All races. Yeah. So I think, you know, we've got a lot of drama in our world, but I do believe we're on the path to positivity, and let's ride it out with a positive beat and see where we can meet and not where we can attack each other. Let's see where we can meet. Where can we align as we go forward into 2024, because watching that from my high school days, I'm telling you, you are so happy when you see your best friends' kids happy. Really.
And you know, it's funny too, because oftentimes in the school system, you know, people with disabilities were segregated as well. There's a lot of that. And you just weren't understood. They thought you were from a different planet. I had some issues of bullying as a young child. Not, you know, three or four different things. I mean, today, you are seeing, you know, some of the stigma being lifted from, you know, being in a wheelchair or being blind or whatever. I am a bit concerned. I think language is really important. People can say, oh, it's just semantics, but I think language is important because it tells me how you think it when you use certain words. And so I'm a little concerned that some of my colleagues, that are in the disability space, and out there advocating for disability rights and privileges and things of that nature, which I'm certainly, a fan of, but I'm a little concerned about some of the words that are being made taboo. Not because I don't think we should be sensitive to everyone's needs and to meet them where they are. And certainly everybody should be treated with dignity and respect. But because, we talked about PC language. I'm concerned that if you cannot clearly articulate your needs, it's very hard to be helped. And I'm a little concerned at some of the words that they're finding objectionable. I personally feel like disabled is a good word, because what it means is I am physically unable to do something. And if I can't express to you what I need and tell you, look, I cannot accomplish this with my physical limitation, then it's real hard for me to expect you to be able to help me or assist me or make things accessible. So I personally like the word disabled. A lot of people don't. A lot of people, that's taboo. But I really feel like I'm concerned about it for two reasons. As I said, I think articulation is important. And secondly, the other thing that I think is really – we have so many amazing things happening in our world that are to the positive. But one thing that I think is not so positive is that people are, they're basically, let's put it this way. If you're looking to be offended, you will be. And I think that.
Yeah.
I think if you come into a situation on the defensive, looking for someone to be disrespectful, then that's what you're going to find, because it really is important to realize that how people use words and take it in context. And I think Diane would agree with this. I'm a communication specialist that happens to make music, but my undergrad degree was in communication. And, you know, the classic communication model, tells you that it doesn't really matter what I mean. It only matters what you think I mean. And so that's why clear, unambiguous language is your best friend. So that's why I like the word disabled, because it says I am unable to do something. Now, I'm not ashamed of that. I don't think you should be ashamed of it. I don't think you should be, I don't think you should label yourself in terms of your disability, but I think you have to be able to recognize it. I mean, the fact is, how ludicrous would it be for me to walk around denying the fact that I can't see? That's nuts.
Mm. Yeah. I personally find the most difficult thing is that this week I'm not allowed to say disabled, and next week I'm not allowed to say unabled, and then week after that I'm allowed to say disabled, but I'm not allowed. That's the problem.
It's crazy. It's crazy. But
one week I can say something, and the next week I'm not allowed to say it.
Well, you know,
as far as I'm concerned, that is what's ridiculous.
I agree. Mm. I think what we need to assume is that everyone is of good intent until proven otherwise. So yes. if somebody uses a word that you find objectionable, instead of railing and getting mad and throwing a fit, if you feel like you've been disrespected, very calmly and kindly, you can say, you know, I realize that you meant this word in such a way, but it bothers me. I feel that word doesn't, I don't like that word. You can tell me that in a kind way, and then I will do my absolute best to be respectful of your needs and remember that. But you should not, whether it's talking about disability or anything else, you should not have to walk on eggshells and worry about every single word that comes out of your mouth.
Because you are who you are. It's true. Like,
but you have that background.
I have a sailor's mouth, and it's not that I'm rude. I do. Well, I have a saying in his mouth because it's my way of being absolutely blunt, forthright, real.
I have a very gallows sense of humor, and that comes from almost dying a bunch of times.
But it actually has to do with humor. It has to do with humor, and it has to do with venting. And it's always, exactly, I don't say things.
How you say it.
I don't tell, like, unless I'm telling someone exactly where to go, they're going to know when I'm telling them where to go.
Well, that's the thing that I want to, this is how I'm going to close the conversation. If the fact of the matter is, I'm intelligent enough to know when someone's being rude to me and when they're not.
Exactly.
And, you know, and so I don't think, like I say, I think you should assume that everyone comes from a well-intentioned place unless they prove to you otherwise. And then what you do is you cut those people out of your life and move on.
This is a good way to spur off into New Year's, but I you did mention Diane on this, and she is the PR teacher here. So
the guru.
Apparently we have to really behave ourselves in PR, and I probably blew it down now that everybody knows I have a big potty mouth. And listen, I learned it from my mother, and she's on the show.
It's all Nancy's fault. Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, the thing about that is, you know, I appreciate hearing that from Joey, because, you know, a lot of times I'm not even up on what's the latest way to say something, but when you're writing and you're writing on behalf of a company, or you're writing on behalf of an employer or whatever, you know, or even of yourself, and it's going out publicly to a broad array of people who see it as like, oh, you're not supposed to say that, and you're not supposed to say that, or that's okay, or this is the way to say it. You know, it's really, you have to really be up on that when you're putting it in writing on behalf of a client or an employer.
But Nancy reminds me too. Nancy has to check my emails, don't you, Nancy? And I have to check yours.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you know, it's on paper, it's on paper, and you can't change it.
The worrying thing is that if there are so many words that we're not allowed to use, we're going to stop talking about stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was my point. Exactly. And, you know, the other thing is, too, that's why I prefer, when it comes to business, I like everything in writing, because people are crazy.
Oh, sure.
And they'll say to you, I didn't say that. Like, oh, yeah, you did. And here it is. And here's the date.
Nancy says that every time we have an issue with any kind of company, that I say, well, let's just call them because we're tired of the chat. She goes, no. I want the chat. Right, Nancy?
But
Nancy wants the chat.
When it comes to disseminating a message that may have a bit of a minefield in terms of what is appropriate to say and what isn't, I actually prefer recording those as video, because you can get subtext. You can get subtext out of the tone of voice and the facial expression as well.
Exactly.
And yeah, that can totally change something's meaning. I mean,
it's helpful to have somebody who's, you know, got, you know, it's not even just a disability. Like I had dated a Chinese guy for a while, and you know, he would always say, this is insulting, this is offensive to me, or you know. So I would ask other Chinese people, like, if I say this, are you offended? And they weren't offended. So it's, you know, it's helpful to have somebody say, you know, it's better for you to say it this way,
right? Absolutely.
In a kind way, like, not assuming I'm trying to be offensive or that I'm ignorant, and yeah, I am ignorant of every single culture's, or, you know, everything.
You can't know it all.
And I think that's okay to say, I'm ignorant on this.
Right.
Like me and potty mouth, you rarely hear it on a show. You'll hear some select words. Nancy once in a while sprouts off something fantastic, and then we all go, holy cow. Look, see, I said cow.
I think we should do a whole show of nothing but expletives from Lisa to see how good she really is.
Yeah.
Don't. Don't ever. But Glenn did his English. We did English language in America, England, Canada, and South Africa. And apparently, I said some things I wasn't supposed. Apparently, I've said a few things in Glenn's podcast that I wasn't.
I can't say I'm not surprised. I didn't mean to.
I didn't know knockers was a bad thing to say until, like, you guys told me.
What is it, Lisa?
Knockers. Don't say knockers. I was talking about chestnuts and not like the knockers game. But yeah, see, Glenn is like, no.
Those are boobs. Yeah,
I know, but I didn't think of it. And I know better, but I didn't think of it that way. But I mean, we've had all, I mean, if you ever, I'm going to link it in the podcast notes, everyone. That show with Glenn and Libra Vidani about the English language words, because Glenn eventually was just like, I can't let my mother hear this podcast. So, you know, it's good. I'm just going to say it was a good show. And we need to do part two of it, because I've got a whole bunch of other words now. And as my memory comes back, I'm like, oh, yeah, let's do it. It's always fun. Because we do have to go. We're always over time because we're naughty on the show. But we've been good, other than the word knockers. And I meant them in chestnut knockers. And that doesn't even sound even better. No, that doesn't sound good either.
You're just digging the hole further.
And we talked about sausage day, just saying. But anyway, I'll wrap it up now because we all have to go. But Glenn, holiday song for you. We've got our music playlist. And it's going to go all the way to New Year's. What is a song for you that you want on the music playlist? I know you all sent me some. What song do you want especially?
I think the one I love most is the one by Jonah Louie, Don't Stop the Cavalry. Or Stop the Cavalry, one or the other. That's a fantastic song.
The Cavalry in England at that time? Is it an English song?
Jonah Louie.
Okay, I'm going to look it up. What about you, Diane? You said a few. You wanted the traditionals.
There was one, the English one, I think, is Father Christmas, you know.
The Capes.
I Believe in Father. Is that what it is? And then, I also like Sleigh Ride because I used to carry my kids on my back and walk, jump around like a horse, and to that. And then I started crying one year, and I said, "You're too big. I can't do it anymore."
Oh wow! Well, Nancy chased me around the yard with a frying pan once.
Seems reasonable.
I was in trouble. But Joey, for you, I know we've got a whole list. You've got Tom Rule on there. Your songs. You've got Jingle Bells. We've got a whole bunch of your songs on the playlist already.
Yeah,
everybody one song you want everyone to hear.
Know, as a blind guy who's a musician, I mean, music's a critical part of any celebration that I do. I am fond of so many. I think Sleigh Ride's an excellent choice, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with Glenn's choice, but I'm going to look it up when we get off. And
I know.
I really do like O Come All Ye Faithful. I think that's great. I think there's a wonderful song, Christmas Time Is Here, from the Charlie Brown Christmas. That's one of my all time favorites. I am a big fan of The Nutcracker. And my mom used to be one of the producers of The Nutcracker when I was a child at the big theater in town when I lived in Florida. And the Sugar Plum Fairies theme is you can't go wrong with that. You know, that's a great. So yeah, I mean, there's so many. I could go on forever, but I do love holiday music.
I think the Nutcracker Suite is one of my all time favorite pieces of music. Like 100%.
It's beautiful.
I don't care. But also you said Nutcracker, speaking of language. But anyway, it goes back to conquering with the chestnuts. But Nancy, you've got some favorites too.
Yes, I like The Christmas Story, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. That's the Christmas song.
Yes. Right? And who wrote that? Who knows who wrote it?
I don't know who wrote it, but Dean Martin sings it.
The Christmas song was actually written by Mel Torme.
Oh, that's right.
But lots of people have redone it. And interestingly, he had to be, his record label pushed him to write a Christmas song. He's like, you don't have a Christmas song, no, you need a Christmas song. So it was his first attempt at a Christmas song. And what a classic.
I love this. Wow. I love all these different songs, but I'm going to go with.
I know what you're doing. Can I guess?
What?
I think Lisa is doing Christmas at Ground Zero by Weird Al.
No, I'm not. But I like it. I like what you're doing. I'm going to add that to the playlist. But I talked about this a couple shows ago, and it's still my favorite holiday song. It's got nothing to do with Christmas, really, but it's 2,000 Miles by the Pretenders. Sorry, Chrissy Hynde fan. And 2,000 Miles. Because you got to think about people. I don't know. There's people that you love and care about, and they're not always around you. And I think as travelers, we feel that all the time.
Absolutely. That makes sense. 2,000 miles
away. Mm-hmm. It's kind of been like that my entire life, you know? And then you have the people immediately around you. And when they're immediately around you, suck it up. Suck up that experience. suck it up and enjoy being that present moment. And enjoy every second of it. Suck up that experience and put it into your memory box later. But really experience it. Don't be looking at your phone. Who gives a damn about your phone?
Absolutely.
When you're with your loved ones, I don't care if it's the holidays or not. When you have those moments, do it. Be 100% present. 100%. Thank you all for joining us here on Big Blend Weekly Podcast. We're going to close the show out with some Hollywood history from Steve Schneikert. So enjoy that. Thank you, everyone. JoeyStuckey.com. Keep up with Joey there. Keep up with Diane at GettingHungry.com. And want to look into what's happening in the new year, go to HungarianAquarian.com. And also keep up with Glenn at Norfolk-Tours.co.uk. Thank you, Glenn. We'll be chatting with you soon.
Indeed. Yeah. Happy Christmas, everybody.
Happy Christmas, Glenn.
Thanks, Glenn.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas,
thank
Glenn.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you. Always a pleasure, you guys.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa and Nancy.
Happy holidays, everybody. It is so good to be in all these wonderful people's company. So you guys have a blessed remainder of the year, and we'll see you next year.
Yep.
Tis the season to be jolly, fa la 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 la. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Silver bells, it's Christmas time in the city. Come. They told me, pa-rum-pum-pum-pum, me and my drum. It is holiday time again. Before you snuggle up on the couch in front of the TV with a bowl of popcorn, a plate of cookies, and your mugs of hot chocolate, you first have to decide just what films to view. Truth be told, there have been many memorable holiday movies made in recent years, but the old classic ones continue to be real favorites for the young and old alike. It's a Wonderful Life, 1946. It seems to be everyone's favorite, and for good reason. In a world of conflict and cynicism, it is refreshing to see the nice guy, Jimmy Stewart, win in the end, and good triumph over evil. 1942's The Man Who Came to Dinner, starring Monty Woolley and Betty Davis. Admiration to Ms. Davis for accepting a secondary role at the time, for she was one of the biggest movie stars in the world, already having won 2 Best Actress Oscars. A Christmas Carol, 1938. This is my favorite version of the Charles Dickens classic by far, starring Reginald Owen as Ebenezer Scrooge and produced by MGM. 1947's The Bishop's Wife, starring David Niven and Loretta Young as the bishop and his wife. Cary Grant plays the angel sent in answer to a prayer that has been offered by the bishop. You're out of the woods, you're out of the dark, you're out of the night. Brum, bum, 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 bum. The Wizard of Oz, 1939. A wonderful holiday classic, watching Dorothy follow the yellow brick road wearing her ruby reds while trying to get to the Emerald City to meet the all and powerful wizard. Meet Me in St. Louis, 1944. Judy Garland has kicked off those Ruby Reds to play Esther Smith. Vincent Minnelli's superb direction takes us to the beginning of the 20th century when electricity and long-distance phone calls were still marvels to behold. 1947's Miracle on 34th Street, starring Edmund Gwynn and Natalie Wood. Do you believe in Santa? Other wonderful film classics include 1942's Holiday Inn, 1944's Going My Way, and 1954's White Christmas, all three films starring Bing Crosby. 1937's Heidi, starring Shirley Temple, 1951's The Lemon Drop Kid, starring Bob Hope, and 1934's Babes in Toyland, a.k.a. March of the Wooden Soldiers, a true Christmas classic starring Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. So have yourself a merry little Christmas now. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to all. I'm Steve Schneikert, and this is Hollywood History as I Recall It.
Thanks for listening to Big Blend Radio's Big Weekly Blend Podcast. You can keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com. And if you want to get our Big Weekly Blend magazine, just sign up for our newsletter at blendradioandtv.com.